Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
The editorial, you know, I want to say a good buddy of mine here, who's a member of our book club, neighbor of mine, sent me an article about China entitled Thinking Through the China Hype. And it's written by a fellow by the name of William Overholt. I will go ahead and post this article, but Jimmy and I wanted to do a daily editorial on it. The author of the article claims that after 2030, China's potential growth will be similar to that of the United States. That's kind of the way I feel about it also. Jim, how about you?
Well, I think that they do have some structural problems, certainly with the demographics and their aging population. And I think he brings that up in his article.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing he brings up in the article is how they, focus so much on infrastructure.
Yeah.
And he compares the U.S. Service industry as being more, continue to carry the U.S. economy.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then that means we'll still depend on Chinese manufacturing. If Chinese manufacturing is the fundamentals for the world economy, which Europeans and most people are dependent upon now, the U.S. in particular, that's a problem.
It is a problem. But the one thing that's going to, I would say, mend America-China relations is the fact that some of their manufacturing is very, very important to us, Jim.
Well, I don't think it's going to mend it. I think it's actually going to force America to pull away from it. Because,
oh, do you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think it begun, 5 years ago under the Trump administration.
Yeah.
And I think people are waking up as Xi consolidates power in China and uses every means possible to expand Chinese influence and reach into natural resources, economic domination in many, many places around the world, it's going to force Western countries to rethink the problem, rethink the relationship, which is going to put China in a very interesting position, because European and U.S. markets are the most advanced, the ones that give a biggest return. So focusing on, say, African markets or Indian markets and some of these other regions, it's going to make it difficult for them to gain the same types of returns that they do with U.S. and Western manufacturing right now.
I have to go through this thing and do what I did in college. I had to take notes and number of things that were important, et cetera, et cetera. What I thought was interesting, and it was probably the eighth most important point, was under Xi Jinping, China seeks to create a new system with extremely centralized executive leadership of the government and state enterprise leadership of the economy, while at the same time retaining the full benefits of market competition. I'm really not sure that that's possible, Jim. What do you think?
Well, it's not. They're two contradictory points.
Yeah.
State control, and he does allude to it, evolves into corruption. And of course, he talks in this article about Xi going on an anti-corruption campaign, and he actually gives him credit for it. But the reality is he's not taking out corruption. He's just focusing the corruption to support his political agenda.
Something that made a lot of sense to me is the author was talking about the main drivers of China's miracle economy, as he calls it. And those main drivers have been threefold. Number one, investment in heavy infrastructure, property development, and urbanization. They have done just about all they can in those areas, as the author points out, and he thinks that those drivers will be pretty much exhausted during this decade. Any comments on that?
I think it's a little bit short-sighted, because you still have a massive population that lives in rural areas.
Yeah.
So again, the urbanization and the infrastructure is actually directly related to manufacturing. If you're pulling in rural workers and actually expanding, they're banning manufacturing and bringing them into that workforce, you're going to have continued urbanization. The infrastructure, and then of course the real estate development issues, is going to be problematic for them, because they do have this demographic problem with the aging population and their actual workforce and the educated workforce.
Yeah.
So big that's going to be a problem. And the social structures that must be in place in a socialist system, in a government-controlled system, in order to support that aging population with the declining, you know, middle ground population. So that those are tough things for them.
Yeah. Well, he also, you know, stresses, Xi also stresses a new model in that it called what he calls, claims is called common prosperity. I'm not really sure that when you have a country that is that diverse and that highly populated, that's an appropriate name for the new model.
Well, I think he's trying to force this, and he's going to use science, technology, social media, social credit scores, government influence, authority, in order to accomplish those tasks, in order to unify and centralize his system, which whenever you create a more rigid system, you're going to have more pushback at some level. And this is why they're so concerned about Hong Kong and why they've really crushed any democracy efforts inside Hong Kong, and why they're so concerned about Taiwan, because these are like culturally similar language, similar, you know, heritage and history, that have experience with democratic values that allow you know, free thought and free markets, completely contradictory to what's happening in Beijing.
Yeah.
So that's why they're such a threat, and that's why you continue to hear these arguments about Taiwan has to be integrated. Wouldn't it be smarter for them to say, I mean, if it wasn't about control, wouldn't it be just better to say, all right, let Taiwan go and we'll just become trading partners and that relationship will continue? But that's not the problem for them. The problem is the idea of a democratic system or a republic evolving on their shores with people that speak the same language and that same history, and how that could so easily spread into Beijing. That's why they've got to crush it.
Yeah, I personally think that the main problem in accomplishing what he wants to accomplish, he really pretty much has to accomplish that, or he and his colleagues really pretty much have to accomplish that. But if they persist on imposing a real firm hand by the government, that's going to slow the growth, I think.
Well, that's what you're seeing today with the massive COVID lockdowns. And one of our, you know, I think it was CFS, probably made a comment, you know, that was, hey, maybe you weren't looking about COVID and what they were doing, you know, just looking at his control technique, and maybe there's something more nefarious about it. And I have to agree, there's a possibility, and we don't know whether or not they released COVID-19 on purpose or if it was accidental, but we do know they've taken advantage of it. What we don't know is the long-term effects, as we've talked about multiple times on the show, and of course for the weekend show we talked about this. We don't know the long-term effects. We don't know what potentially could happen and how much of an impact that could have on Western civilization, and certainly the vaccination processes that they're using, different than what the, you know, Pfizer, Moderna, and the other, you know, Western, quote Western, that actually do a lot of the manufacturing in China anyway. But some of these Western companies, pharmaceutical companies, have used this technology, may be incredibly damaging. And that may be why they're so afraid of expanding and what the long-term impacts are of COVID, because they may understand what the objective was here, and that objective may have been much more nefarious than many people thought possible. And we don't know for sure, but it's an incredibly dangerous prospect because of the fact that we can, science and scientists can do so much through CRISPR-Cas9, you know, genetic engineering, with some of these biological research systems that can actually target individuals as well as entire societies and cultures with devastating effects.
Well, Jimmy, let me ask you this. The zero COVID policy that's happening in China, to an extreme, almost as much of an extreme as we had here in the U.S., well, the zero COVID policy that included here, closing schools, closing workplaces, et cetera, I would maintain that had a hugely detrimental effect on the society in the United States. And I would maintain that it absolutely killed our economy for a while.
Yeah, no, I agree. But again, I'll make the same point that I made yesterday in our discussions.
Yeah.
If you're an authoritarian leader, you can care less. It doesn't matter. If you're still making money at a certain percentage but the population's suffering, what difference does it make to you? But more importantly, if you're gaining power or you're concerned about something even deeper, then with a centralized system of control, you're going to make decisions that cost thousands and millions of people their life. And I'll just go back to Soviet Stalin, Soviet processes, the Holodomor in Ukraine. You know, his collectivization killed millions of people. They never thought twice about it. Never a problem. And you know, Stalin's comment very clearly was, you know, one death is a tragedy. A million deaths is a statistic. You look at the Khmer Rouge. You look at what China's done with the Uyghurs. You look at any communist centralized system, any authoritarian system, and at some point, they're not going to care if they have enough control. The problem is the more control they put over, the more pushback they're going to get over time. And that's where the risk lies in continuing these types of policies. And U.S. lockdown policy and the damage it did is nowhere near as extensive and as controlled as the zero COVID policy in China.
Yeah, I mean, they're not even close.
Yeah, they're locking down whole cities. They're keeping people locked in buildings and rooms. Right. They're separating them out. It's actually quite dystopian.
I find it interesting that China is going to that extreme, given the fact that many Americans, including myself and Donald Trump, really feel that this COVID virus really was instigated in China. And if it was, and it's hurting them as badly as it hurt us, what can I say? You know what I'm saying? It just, they really made a mistake.
Well, I mean, yeah, but again, what's the price, you know, for someone, an authoritarian leader that loses, you know, well, under Stalin's reign, possibly as much as 25 to 30% of the entire population was killed. Either died of starvation, was put into camps, or died in World War II.
Yeah.
They did not have concern for the population. And unfortunately, in Asian communities, they look at the world in a much different way than Western ideas do. Because in the West, we look at it, the individual as an important, you know, aspect in our individual freedoms and choice. It's a very collective system in Asia, and that's just the reality. They look at the world differently.
Yeah. You know, I opened this editorial by basically reading something that was right under the caption that was right underneath the name of the editorial. And that was, after 2030, China's potential growth will be similar to that of the United States. That's an interesting point. And I guess what I would say is, what does that mean for the world, in your opinion, Jim?
So if they reach parity economically, and he points out in the article that, oh, by the way, they may economically be at our level, but their individual, the quality of life or the individual amount of incomes will be much different than what the U.S. is. So, you know, people are going to still be in a very, you know, poverty-stricken area or at least an equivalent to Western society, much more so than what we would expect. And that would just kind of a balance. And he uses the Japan model, where in the 80s, everyone thought Japan was going to overtake us.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between Japan. Japan had, you know, 100 million people. We had 280, you know, 300 million people.
Yeah.
We've grown. They haven't grown much. China has 1.4 billion people.
Yeah.
They can lose a lot and they still are, you know, moving people from very, very poor urban areas in rural areas and moving them into the urban areas. There's a lot of potential growth there. So I don't actually agree with his view that it's going to balance out at some point, though I do believe that China is going to face some very serious problems that they will, you know, in economic problems, political problems. And then, of course, if they expand into Taiwan, that's going to be a whole nother
disaster. Huge can of worms. Yeah. Jim, I'd like you to elaborate on one point that you just made, and that is, what kind of political problems do you think they're going to have?
So they're attempting to centralize all government, all control. And they've done a pretty good job with that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is they've got, you know, very large swaths.
Yeah.
You know, the Uyghurs is not a huge population, but it's a problematic population for them. Tibet, the Mandarin versus Cantonese, that, you know, there's a very, very disparate set of groups there that have kind of bought into the whole, hey, we can make money and go on and trade and everything. We can accept this overarching control of the government. At some point, those factors and those different cultural identities and the attempt to control are going to come into conflict, because of favoritism.
Yeah.
That happened, and corruption.
Yeah.
Because inevitably, in a centralized system, you evolve into a corrupt system.
You bet you do.
If there's not transparency, if there is not open, not just open discussion, but actually people that are doing better, they want to protect their interests more and they have more influence. So the richer you get, the more you want to protect your interests. If the government's coming down to threaten that, then you're going to influence and try to change that, which is exactly what Khodorkovsky did in Russia and why Putin threw him in prison. Got that type of pressure that will happen in Japan. And again, these leaders, these authoritarian leaders, don't last forever.
Yeah.
So politically, trying to consolidate power may in fact create conditions that undermine his power and may in fact cause separations from different groups that he's trying to control because they're not getting an equal share.
Yeah. Well, as I said at the onset of this editorial, I'm going to post the article itself. I'd like some of you guys who are really interested, truly interested, I'd like you to read it and comment on it if you would. Jimmy, thanks so much, bud.
Yeah, you bet.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.